And we are back with Mr. Matt Welch. We had to take a wine break. Matt is drinking white. I'm drinking red. There we are.
That's right.
Okay. Let's go to... We can come back to Rose.
All right.
How's that? Let's talk about blogging for a minute.
Okay.
Let's see. Now that you write for Reason...
Yes.
What is your exact title of Reason?
I'm associate editor of Reason Magazine. I'm also a media columnist, so I write a monthly column in the magazine having to do with journalism in some way.
And part of your duties, I assume, is to contribute to Reason's blog called Hit and Run.
Yes. I think it's even contractual. The idea is that I post 1 to 3 posts a day on Hit
and Run. Oh, really?
Yes. And in addition to that, write a online column once every 2 weeks. In fact, I have one that's due tomorrow on, obviously, Alaskan, not Alaskan. Is it Alaskan? I should check that.
You should check what you're writing?
No, it's obviously, it's Hawaiian, the Hawaiian independence movement. It's actually fascinating. Stop laughing at me.
Independence from what?
From the United States of America, man.
Fuck them!
Are you kidding? Why not free them?
Because we would have 49 states, we have to change all our flags?
That's not a good reason, Tony. Let our people go. Let them eat poi. Let them eat their own poi, for once. The interesting thing is this, Tony.
Yeah.
I was at both the Republican and Democratic convention this year, as you well know.
Yes, I did.
And
very jealous.
Well, you shouldn't be. But at the Democratic convention, I was staying with a nice guy who was invited me to his hotel room, basically, on the emails before. He was familiar with my writing somehow and had lived in Prague, kind of like friend of a friend of a friend of a friend. And he was like an alternate delegate of the American Democrats abroad. So he was just a stoner. He was a great guy. Really sweet. And he's like, hey, you want to stay with me? And he didn't really know what he was getting into. And I said, okay. And he went out one night partying with the Kucinich people and then a bunch of crazy Hawaiians. And apparently they just all got real baked and talked about Hawaiian independence. And the Kucinich people were like, you know, we're behind you. I was like, this is crazy talk. And I wrote a post about it on Hit and Run, just trying to get Lone Wacko excited. Like, they're separatists.
They are separatists.
And the thing is, they are. And then I went to the Republican convention, and I happened to see a bunch of delegates on the floor, and they're usually, like, crazy old people from Texas, really nice old ladies, you know, like from Florida and stuff, really bad, boring political people. But they're rarely, like, 100% fun. And there was a delegation of mostly women, 40s to 60s, totally in lays and Hawaiian shirts, just, like, screaming and partying, and they're clearly a little bit drunk. And they're, like, you know, they're the delegates, you know. They're not, like, some riffraff. And I went over, and I had to talk to them, and I ended up talking to this woman, and who turned out to be a congressman, I found out, like... 10-15 minutes into the interview, I'm like, hey, you know, did you know that the Democrats, they're all supporting Hawaiian independence or sovereignty or whatever? And she's like, yes, and so do I. And I'm sure I'm going to mangle this in advance because I have to go back and check my notes. But it's more nuanced than that. There was lines in both the Democratic and the Republican Party platform under pressure from their Hawaiian delegations to support various moves for increasing the sovereignty of ethnic Hawaiians. Kind of, basically, part of it is to lock in the subsidies that they get from the federal government. They get probably more money per person than any state except for maybe Alaska. So they want to lock that in, have more independence with it, but at the same time, you know, basically just like nail that teat in their mouth.
Right.
But a lot of people within Hawaii, that's a stalking horse for like a true independence movement, which has I don't know if the full independence movement, but something close to it has bipartisan support from Hawaiian. People don't realize it. And I'm all for it.
Why?
Why not? Why should we... I mean, I haven't looked into it, obviously, but...
Because we... I would imagine because we need them militarily.
I'm sorry, were you an imperialist? I forgot that part where TonyPierce.com was a pro-imperialist site. We need them militarily. We need Iraq militarily, motherfucker.
Isn't that why we're there?
No.
Oh. I've been to Hawaii and I liked it. I want to think that that's part of America.
I
want to think that Pearl Harbor is a place that we don't have to negotiate to have troops there if the shit goes down 100 years from now in a time that we can't even fathom. Isn't it better to have a port there?
Isn't it better that people have national self-determination?
No.
Why?
South Carolina wants that. Texas definitely wants that.
Texas had that. Did you know that Texas, I'm stupid, so I don't really know history. Texas, like, after the Civil War, didn't tell black people that slaves had been freed?
I did hear that. That's where the Juneteenth comes from.
Yeah, it's Juneteenth.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Though.
Which I only learned about because I attributed it, Lee. I attributed it incorrectly this year. And somebody goes, hey, I didn't know anybody outside of Texas knew about this, but you're wrong, Tony. It means this. And corrected me. Thank God for comments. Back to blogging.
Sorry. Hawaiian independent. So, I blog I 1 to 3 posts a day, and then my personal site has become aggressively and purposefully more and more irrelevant as the has gone on.
And that's why, as a fan of your personal blog, and unfortunately not a reader of Hit and Run.
Why? How could you not be a reader of Hit and Run? What, you didn't get enough coverage in the magazine?
That's exactly it. Because the magazine just is so perfect, I don't need anything else.
Yeah, yeah. Look, Hit and Run is great. It's really one of the best weblogs out there.
Maybe also because the commenters are a bunch of idiots on there.
No, they're not, actually. They're not, really.
Maybe I've just gotten through the wrong thread.
I mean, there are certain overwhelming, like, shared notions, but the good thing is that those comments exist. I would like to point out and
totally
emphasize,
agree.
You don't see comments in National Review, The American Prospect, you don't see a blog, as far as I know, on The Nation. It is a magazine that believes enough in its own, the wisdom of its own readers, to let them argue amongst themselves, anonymously. They're all like, you know, Thoreau, and these... Gaius Marcus and stuff, although he's still
let's go a little deeper in that for just a second.
Sure.
Why do you think these other blogs don't have comments in there?
It's because most comment sections are terrible, mm-hmm. and you know, at some point it becomes embarrassing. It's like if you read Kevin Drum of the Washington Monthly. You don't read Kevin Drum? What lefty blogs do you read? Atrios?
I don't read hardly any of them. The only quote unquote lefty blog that I read is you and Metafilter.
Interesting.
Metafilter is way left.
Yeah.
I mean, they even admit it. In fact, when they pick on the few righty users that say something, they actually self-police themselves and they say, "Hey, stop with the gang piling. This is why we don't have righties in Metafilter."
Right. Stephen Den Best to quit. Well, I think
I think I know what lefties think.
That's true.
And so why read them?
I go because like the three lefty blogs that I look at, and it's kind of random in a way, but historically have been Atrios, even though he dislikes me pretty intensely.
Really?
We've actually exchanged email back and forth, and it hasn't been unpleasant email, but. Early on, he just identified me as a war blogger, and you know.
Well, you named your friggin' blog that at the beginning.
It's still named that. I'm not gonna sell my name out. I invented the fucking word.
Did you invent it?
Yes. Look it up on Wikipedia.
You're in Wikipedia?
Wiki-seeky fucking pedia.
You know I'm in there, too.
As what?
Columbia Necklace. I was the one that reminded people that one of the reasons why O.J. was not guilty was because of the Colombian necktie, also known as the Colombian necklace.
Okay.
I get about 3 hits a day off of Colombian necklace off of the Wikipedia.
I can't believe there was any aspect of the O.J. trial that was undercovered.
Well, people didn't want to talk about that part because part of the Colombian necklace was the fact that both of the victims' throats were cut in such a way that it mimicked what drug people do to people who narc on them, which is cut their throats so wide and deep that they can stick their tongues out through the slit and make what looks like a tie out of their tongue.
Dude, I invite you to my house, I even pick you up, and you're laying this kind of just horrific Bullshit on him?
And therefore, if it was a crime of passion from an amateur, let's say this was the first crime that... the first murder that O.J. had committed,
right.
It wouldn't look just like all these other professional murders.
Okay. Apologist. My dad, as you know, thinks that O.J. was not guilty as well.
I got to talk to him.
Yeah.
God bless him.
Listeners out there, my dad is a reliable Republican voter. His thing was LA cops are racist. I don't believe him.
Yeah, and so therefore, why would they jump the fence of an ex-husband of the victim under the terms that they were there to see that he was okay? When was the last time that Mark Furman jumped the fence of another black ex-husband in L.A. in any of the other murder convictions that night to make sure that they were okay?
Well, listen, Johnny Cochran Jr.
Yes.
We're talking about me here. Okay. Not about how great it was.
Back to comments.
Comments. What do you want to know now? Yeah.
How come these people don't put comments in their blog?
Because if you go on Kevin Drum's site, Washington Monthly, he's a reasonable liberal guy, read his comments, they're unreadable and awful. If you go to Atrios's comments, unreadable and awful. And
yeah.
Maybe my definitions of what makes something unreadable and awful changes. Maybe you think hit and run qualifies as that. I think there's still enough back and forth and political plurality there, and kind of self-policing, as dorky as it sounds, of people that somehow we've maintained that kind of civility. And also the site and the publication itself, even though it is published by a nonprofit with political aims, you know, it has, I think, a more pluralistic political ideological approach than almost any political magazine you'll see, ironically enough. And so that allows, and the readers respond to that. So we have lefty commentators, we have righty commentators, totally anti-war, totally pro-war, and even though they talk shit about each other, it still basically works. It doesn't work. The more partisan a site gets, in my experience, the less it's going to work. If the Insta Pundit had comments, they'd be a disaster immediately. You know, which is not to say that he's the most partisan, but he's partisan enough. And he's big enough. It's also like just if you have that much traffic.
Let me stop you right there.
Yeah, go on.
If he's not the most partisan, who is?
Oh, plenty of people are more partisan than he is.
Go ahead, name names.
RedState.org is more partisan. Hugh Hewitt is more partisan by a factor of 17.
What's the difference between Hugh Hewitt for our listeners out there than Insta Pundit?
Hugh Hewitt wrote a book whose subhead was something along the lines of why it's important to crush the Democratic Party forever.
Okay.
I don't think Glenn actually believes that. Glenn was, if I'm not mistaken, I think he worked on a younger Al Gore's campaign, pre-Clinton.
Really?
Yeah, I could be fudging stuff here, but I think he was a Democrat, and he was an active Democrat in the 70s and at least up until like some point in the 80s. And he has claimed, and I see no reason not to take him at his word, that if he had a Democrat who satisfied his requirements of being X on the war on terror, he would support that Democrat.
Mm-hmm.
I have a hard time imagining any Democrats meeting his requirements for that.
Right.
Joe Lieberman might have come close. I think Joe Lieberman would have been a disaster of a president.
Yeah.
I think he's a jackass, basically.
And he comes across as a whiner.
Yeah. That's
just
hate Jews, Tony.
Well.
Look, the helicopter.
Wait a second here.
The helicopter's coming out.
I know. I can't defend myself. We're being sarcastic here. You know, the person that I might end up working for next, One of the owners of the new company is Jewish. Of course the helicopter is here. Let's pause.
What do you mean? This is a crucial ambience.
The helicopter of L.A.?
Yes.
Because we get to show people what living in L.A. is about.
Exactly. And right now they got the searchlight comes down on Tony.
I know.
Tony's running.
There's a black man in Los Feliz. This is wrong.
He's north of Sunset.
He doesn't look black, but we can tell.
We can tell he is. No, I love Jews. Some of my...
Oh, stop it.
Do I have any Jewish best friends?
Jeff Sullivan.
Oh, yeah, okay, you're right.
Right.
He was my business partner for a little while.
Exactly.
Because Jews are good with money.
Fucker.
Actually,
you're good with scalping tickets. And
that's right.
Perfectly.
That's right. No, Jeff was perfect for the company because he was willing to climb underneath the houses
and deal
with the dead rats, and I was not up for that. And I was actually good with the money.
But no, comments are a rough show. And in fact, on my personal blog, I've made a point, both in terms of the way that I generally write and comport myself there, and the topics that I choose, which I intend to be personal, esoteric, and weird as much as possible.
Yes.
And also in the way that I engage with people who go there to troll, which is very, very infrequently.
Haven't you noticed that it's easier to be aggressive and mean in the comments than it is in the post?
Well, sure, because you're usually addressing one person's specific argument.
Right.
And, you know, you don't have something that people read every day, you know?
Yeah.
I have a public life to some degree, and I have a responsibility. Even in this interview, is in some respects irresponsible because I am talking out of memory about conversations I might have had half drunk with Hawaiian congresswomen in New York City, and I'm probably rendering it inaccurate, right? And if I'm writing, I would never do that.
Mm.
I might say something like, well, we had a conversation and the gist of it was like this. But it's rare because no one wants to read the word gist. It's awful.
Really?
Yeah, and you just have a responsibility with the written word and people looking there every day. So people who blog, even if they have zero journalistic training, they end up having their own senses of responsibility that come with the territory.
Mm-hmm.
And they themselves usually become more civilized in their comments on other people's sites, just mm-hmm. because they're used to putting it out there for a general audience as opposed to just throwing darts in somebody's anonymous comment section.
Does Hit and Run edit their comments at all? Edit meaning delete nasty ones, or?
Very infrequently. Tim Kavanaugh runs it. He's an authoritarian. He's an autocrat. And if he is finally just pissed off at someone, they'll be banned. And he will or will not explain himself. It happens very, very infrequently. And when it does, people, you know, talk about it. And it happened like to a guy who was a well-known, loved, despised commentator who used a variety of different names. On there, Jason Bourne was one of his. Every time he's the one who called me an anti-European racist once. That's great. Wear that like a fucking crown. But Tim at some point just became exasperated with him. This guy was really, really smart.
Yeah.
But Tim's like, all right, if you're going to continue commenting here, here are 10 rules, and they're only for you.
Does this dude have a blog?
No, I mean, not that I know of. I would totally read it if he did, although he's a bit joyless, kind of like Duncan Black, Atreos is. I mean, I think Atreos is a terrific blogger.
Yeah.
In the way that I think Glenn Reynolds is a terrific blogger.
They're absolutely.
Great at what they do.
Absolutely.
And I don't think that he has, if I'm guessing about his personality, I don't think he has, and he certainly does not communicate much of any joy or pleasure at anything. He seems to me a kind of a rancid personality. He probably thinks that I'm I eat squirrel cock in the night or whatever, but
well, it's a delicacy in some countries.
It sure is. So comments, weird.
Okay.
I think the thing that I am very feel strongly about on my comments on my stupid little site,
yes,
is that I hate to see it when people's own blogs get warped and changed by their comments.
Absolutely.
When they develop a hallelujah, God, I can't talk, a chorus of people who egg them on to this position. And I think it happens especially with people who don't have experience with audiences in whatever form.
Right.
Like, I think, you know, strangely enough, the Prague experience of having a lot of media attention, which was a weird and distortional thing that, I mean, I acted very poorly and with at the time, but it was a great primer for this kind of crap because you kind of realize what it's like, how you deal with attention and a sudden audience out of nowhere,
mm-hmm.
and mistakes that you don't want to make. And I've seen people who I used to enjoy a great deal become twisted and, for my money, unreadable by their own comment sections, and I will never allow that to happen on my site. It'll never happen. It's not remotely going to happen.
You promised you we weren't going to talk about Little Green's football.
Look,
I try.
Excellent try. No, I've told Charles in at a public debate.
Is that what you were thinking about?
I think Charles has been.
I was kidding, by the way.
I think Charles has been affected negatively by his comment section. I don't think that there's any doubt about that. He would probably disagree, or he would probably agree. I don't know.
Do you read his site?
Not anymore. Once in a great while, I will, and I will always be reminded that it is always useful.
Because we get to hear what that portion of that party is about?
No, because I don't care.
You don't care what the extreme right or the extreme...
Well, Charles, I don't think, belongs to a political party. He was a Democrat until recently.
Really?
Yes. Charles was a lifelong Democrat.
So who screwed it up? Who screwed it up that Insta Pundit and Charles Johnson switched?
Well,
did the terrorists win by taking these two brilliant, brilliant men and flipping them in this weird reactionary way?
I don't think that whatever Glenn is, I don't think he's reactionary. I think.
But he's definitely not a Democrat anymore.
No, but I mean, you know, so. I mean, does being a Democrat mean that you're good? I'm not a fucking Democrat. I'm not gonna be a fucking Democrat.
Of all eras to switch over to the Republican side, this seems to be the most curious time and the most curious president to switch over
to. If you're, it's a classic case. If you're a liberal mugged by 9/11, if you think that the best way to handle that atrocious fucking massacre is by taking the fight to those motherfuckers, dulling the edges if necessary. If you have to, like, break a few eggs, you do it. If that's what you think, what party do you vote for?
You vote for the party who is after actually those motherfuckers. Those motherfuckers are not Saddam Hussein. And that's been proven.
I see your point.
Because I am one of those liberals who not only is a pacifist, but a pussy pacifist at that, who was ready...
You were anti-Afghanistan. I want to put that on the permanent record.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But on 9/11, I'll put it this way.
For at least 2 hours, you were going to, like, kick someone in the calf.
When? Yes. You're right. If you would have said, here's a gun, aim at that guy, because he did it, I would have taken the gun.
Well, that's fucking courage, Tony.
It's not courage. It's reactionaryism. But instead, I made a pussy-ass photo essay to the children of Afghanistan.
Well, and, you know, I don't know, do you belong to the Democratic Party?
No.
No. But let's just call you a Democrat for the sake of argument.
Yeah.
Because it serves my...
On paper, I'm certainly that.
Yeah, you vote, what, 80, 90% Democrat?
No. But I defend them in my blog, and I think that's more important than actual voting. Because I can influence more people through my blog than I can in my vote. So therefore, I'm probably a Democrat.
Well, if you wanted to go kick ass on terrorists, you know, are you going to want to belong to a party with a guy who writes little love letters to the children of the people whose country we need to invade? Or are you going to belong to a party that maybe they went too far this way, maybe they kind of fudged things when they shouldn't have, but by God, they're going to take the fight to the terrorists, to the bad people, and they're going to, and this is also very important, they're going to initiate a process of democratization in the Middle East, in theory, that is going to address one of the root causes of terrorism and eventually be the biggest catalyst for positive change.
So your belief is that terrorism is rooted in the errors of totalitarianism. Because there was a dictator, there was terrorism.
No. I'm just
because there was a lack of democracy, there was terrorism.
I'm getting into the minds of why Glenn Reynolds or Charles Johnson wouldn't have any real desire to hang with the Democratic Party right now,
or vote for Gore.
Because there is truth to the matter that X percentage of the Democratic Party is pretty reliably pacifist, like you are.
Yes.
That therefore, X percentage of Democratic leaders will not have the moxie, to use a word,
My beautiful wife.
To to fight wars vigorously and without apology.
Now, it's funny because... Now, please explain... Hold on, where are we at? We're 24 minutes.
We got 30.
No, I'm just trying to make it into bite-sized chunks.
Sure.
Explain to us, because you are an expert on Central European and Eastern European politics and history of the 80s and 90s.
Hardly, but go on.
You wrote all those books.
Yeah.
Clinton took care of Bosnia in a snap.
That's not true at all.
Nice.
Clinton
took care of Bosnia.
Well, there are two answers to that. One is that Bosnia and Sarajevo were a one-sided slaughterhouse for 3 years.
Mm-hmm.
We knew who the bad people were in this fight. It wasn't really up for dispute. During those 3 years, Clinton did very little or nothing of value to halt that slaughter there.
Mm-hmm.
He did come around in 95, and the whole second term of his presidency was very pro-engagement in Yugoslavia, with the exception of he never committed to sending American troops there until after wars were resolved.
Mm-hmm.
But for 3 long years, and those are 3 years in which a lot of our good friends were living in Sarajevo, living in Mostar, living in Zagreb and places like that, there was just daily senseless slaughter. And it wasn't only that the bad guys were shooting the not-so-bad guys. It was that there was a global arms embargo against the not-bad guys getting weapons to shoot back.
Right.
It was that bad. The Europeans really screwed up, and it's really interesting. It's more interesting than we can get into. I was a big supporter early and often of intervention in Yugoslavia. I've since come to have some doubts about that, especially in Kosovo, not so much in Sarajevo. Because what it did is it lowered the bar for intervention by America. When you say, or when you think, and I assume that you do, that the war in Iraq was wrong and potentially illegal and without international support or UN authorization, it was 10 times more blessed by the UN, more legal than the war in Kosovo.
Interesting.
Wasn't even close. War in Kosovo was totally unilateral. We're doing this because we want to. Fuck the UN. You know, we'll talk, consult with the French and the Russians just because we have to.
Mm-hmm.
Clinton...
So real quick then.
Yeah, sure.
So why do these Republicans hate Clinton so much? He's it sounds like, using your last couple sentences, he's more of a badass than Bush ever was.
Because he did it for 3 years, which I hated him for.
Yeah,
time. At a crucial time in world politics, stuff was changing and everything was going on. He didn't do anything. His foreign policy, all in all, was really ineffectual for the first 2 or 3 years of his presidency.
Mm-hmm.
I think they hated him for other reasons, but let's assume good reasons, and let's assume foreign policy discussion.
Yeah.
He had Warren Christopher shuttling back and forth to the Middle East. He was an old guy with a terrible wrinkle face, and didn't make any sense, and nothing seemed to be happening. You know, there would be slaughter in Rwanda, you know, Somalia, people being dragged, and it felt like he didn't have his own compass. He felt unsure of himself. He didn't know how to deal with the isolationist wing in the Republican Party at the time, which controlled Congress from 94 on. And he just basically didn't communicate any real rock values or anything. I believe that starting with his second term and maybe a little bit before that, as Madeleine Albright got hold of the policy and as he started surrounding himself with Central European-related people, that his foreign policy did gain a focus and a commitment to certain ideals, many of which are shared by the Bush administration, and people lose sight of the fact that there's a great continuity in American foreign policy in general. I think that real hawkish Republicans, especially like post 9/11, post facto, I was a hawk against Osama bin Laden back then, even though I really wasn't, will criticize Bush for being the kind of guy who just sends a cruise missile as a message in the desert at night against someone, right? Which is kind of what he did.
Yeah.
He was reluctant to use American force. It must be said that you know, Colin Powell was more reluctant than Clinton,
right,
to use American force at the time. Madeleine Albright, much more than either one of those two, really wanted to use it all the time. And in fact, I mean, I read her biography. There isn't any problem that she's ever seen that American force, more escalated, wouldn't solve.
Mm-hmm.
And the same is true with John McCain and a lot of other people. And I think that those people need a reality check themselves. And a lot of the war hawks do, too. If you got all the wars that you wanted, if we were as aggressive as you wanted, we're going to have to do something. There's going to have to be a draft. Something's going to have to be sacrificed. You haven't thought this through. The thing that they really haven't thought through, and which I almost never see them even address, is what happens when you have a zero-sum world, which you do in terms of power, military power. So imagine that it's a school, it's an elementary school. You got one fucking kid who can do and say and act however he pleases. How do you suppose the other kids are gonna treat that one kid?
Right.
They're going to hate his guts.
Yeah.
They really are. And that is actually going to be a measurable problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that the administration never can get their heads around correctly. They are always like, huh, isn't it funny that like 91% of India hates our guts? Why does India hate your guts? Big country, democracy, they're moving and doing stuff in Bangalore or whatever. They shouldn't be hating our guts.
Right.
But I was...
We're giving them their jobs.
Oh, well, thank God. I mean...
No, therefore, why should they hate us? We're helping their economy.
I think hate us is strong, but fear us is because they think, rightly so, that we will do what we want to do, and that might even include something as totally impossible to happen as invading India. And that sounds crazy. I was down in Mexico. I was sitting there at a table at, like, the all-inclusive restaurant, and I hear this, is that Matt Welch? And,
get out of here.
Yeah. She had written the cover story for the August-September issue of Reason. She did an interview with Salman Rushdie, Indian-born, lives in Detroit, wonderful woman named Shika. And we talked about this because Emmanuel's parents came out and met us in the Yucatan. And so the Indian and the French wanted to talk about the anti-Americanism. actually, it was the political science American... a husband of the Indian who wanted to talk with the French and the Indian. Anyway, the Indian was very puzzled by her own country's response to America going to war in Iraq. A lot of it was like, you know, if they do this, they can do anything. They can invade us.
Yeah.
And that is irrational. We're not going to invade India ever. Ever. It's not going to happen. They're going to be our pals, more or less. They're stumbling in the right direction. But we don't understand the role of irrationality in foreign policy and in global relations. It's fucking game theory. And I think that is the area that I'm the most worried about. I'm more worried about that right now and the implications of that and the terrorism that can breed, that irrationality. And those are terrorists we can't go and kill.
Yeah.
Those are Indians. We don't kill Indians.
And they have nukes.
And now they have nukes.
We're pussies against countries with nukes.
Yes. And if you're a country and you think you're cool and, you know, you're kind of crappy, like if you're the Ukraine or actually someone would be a better example, you know, Bangladesh or something like that, some country with 100 million people that has aspirations to be for Brazil. There's your country. If you're Brazil, why wouldn't you get nuclear weapons right now? Why wouldn't you?
Why would you?
Because if you get nuclear weapons, suddenly people want to negotiate with you. Suddenly people take you seriously.
Mm-hmm.
And if you have any outstanding claims against neighbors, India and Pakistan, you've got some force.
Mm-hmm.
So, of course, Iran's going to go for nukes. Everyone in North Korea is going to go for nukes.
Right.
Why not?
Right.
And I think that by going to war easily, that we increase the desire of people to get those nukes. Now, you can't operate your foreign policy based on trying to make crazy people not get nuclear weapons. But it's part of it. And I think it's something that is not thought through at all.
Mm-hmm. Let's pause right now for a commercial break, which won't be a commercial, unless you consider this a commercial. Czar's new album, Evangelo's Money, co-written in part by Mr. Matthew Lee Welch.
Thank you very much.
Is in the record stores now. And at Amazon.com. And where else? You're making a fortune off this record, aren't you?
Yeah, we're going to buy not just this house, but this block.
Yeah!
Off the record.
and shut it down, and only white people can live in this block.
Actually, Emmanuel was like, we went to see the movie yesterday. What was the...
You saw the
Wedding Crashers.
Yeah.
Great movie.
Good, I'm glad to hear it.
Yeah, really, really funny. Bad hand jobs under the table. Really. Everything you really wanted in the movie. And she's like, wait, so the Eclipse wrote a song on the new record?
She only grasped that yesterday?
Well, she grasped the financial implications. But does that mean we get money?
Yeah, baby, we're going to get a lot. No.
$20 each month, probably.
I don't think they'll ever see any money, ever. I mean, the Corvids sold...
It's royalties, though.
It's songwriting royalties on a single song, on a 10-song record. That single song, unless something weird happens, is not going to be a single.
That's true.
You get songwriting royalties, from what I understand, based on ASCAP or BMI or whoever else, doing a general broad scan across radio and jukeboxes and stadiums.
Oh, really?
And so then they get performance royalties to people who played on it and songwriting royalties for the people who wrote the song. So you're talking about a record which probably right now has sold in the hundreds.
Yeah.
So far. And it's a co-written 10th song. Of something that's been out for 2 weeks. The only way that I would perceivably make money off of it, and even then I'm not sure about it, is if the record went big, then Jeff sold his publishing rights, songwriting publishing
rights. To Michael Jackson?
Just to a company, to ASCAP,
right.
BMI, or whatever. What they'll occasionally do is if you're just breaking and going big on the radio, they'll say, all right, here's $750,000.
Ah.
And the first $750,000 in royalties from you, we keep. But it's yours a little advance. They butter you up. So in theory,
this is a terrible commercial for the album.
Yeah, really.
This is supposed to be a commercial for the commercial break.
Yeah, I'm sorry. Look, you started talking about greed, and it all went south. Point is, I'm never going to get any money, and the record's great.
Glad to hear it. We'll be right back.